One of our key founding fathers was Ben Franklin, and although he was not an Orthodox Christian, he did make a passionate speech on behalf of prayer during the Constitutional Convention in 1787. That speech may well have broken through a major logjam in the proceedings. Recently, historian Jane Cook, a former White House speechwriter and author, made a video on the 320th birthday of Franklin, in which was discussed his role as the father of free speech in America. And interestingly, the last thing Ben Franklin did or requested from Congress was that they abolish slavery. Jane Cook joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Jane, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate having you back on again.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Sure. So let's talk about Ben Franklin. And I want to begin with this last point, this idea that I understand just before he died, his concern was to try and abolish slavery. Just tell us all the details. This is interesting.
Sure. So he sent a letter to Congress, and that was his request. He had concluded that the way to solve the issue of slavery would have to be through legislation, and that it would have to come from Congress. And that was his last request of Congress before he died a few weeks later. And when he died, 20,000 people came to his funeral procession in Philadelphia. And you had members of all the different clergy, different churches. You had a Jewish rabbi came and they walked in the procession, these ministers. It was a huge, thing when he passed away, because he was such a Renaissance guy. He just dabbled in everything and excelled in so many things. And, you know, he didn't like slavery, and he'd come to conclude that it needed to be abolished and that the way to do that was through legislation. And so that was his last request of Congress. I don't know if he could tell he was dying soon. You know, I don't know exactly about that, but he was definitely getting frail. And so so he was a great influencer of his day.
He also was one of the ones who founded the first abolition society, I believe, in the country, and that was there in Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia, yep. That's true. Early on, what I like to say is that the Declaration of Independence was the starting point, and people kept refining what that meant in society. And a lot of people like Ben Franklin became abolitionists because they saw that as the next big important thing to solve.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because when President Lincoln made that famous speech, the Gettysburg Address, where he says 67 years ago, if you do the math, 1863, it brings you back to 1776. In other words, he's referring to the Declaration of Independence in that 67 years ago reference. Now, back to Ben Franklin. His grave, which is in Philadelphia, and it's certainly obviously a tourist site, there are many pennies on that grave. People throw pennies. Why is that? Is that maybe because of his old phrase, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned or something? I mean, I don't know. Where did that tradition start?
Yes.
If you know.
I think that's exactly what it is. A penny saved is a penny earned. And what he did is that he was the most successful newspaper publisher in the British colonies, but he also published this almanac, Poor Richard's Almanac, and he took on the pseudonym of being Poor Richard. And he would say and have these witty sayings and almost like Proverbs. His father taught him a lot of the book of Proverbs when he was a child, and you see him spouting words of wisdom throughout his life and in the almanac. And the almanac reached all of the colonies. It was sold everywhere, whereas newspapers were not prevalent everywhere. But in that way, Ben Franklin was a huge influencer on what people thought, you know, through his almanac, and then in Philadelphia through his newspaper.
You know, among those Poor Richard's Almanac, the witty sayings that you're referring to, one of my favorites, I grew up, in fact, where my mom used to say this all the time, and then only later did I realize, oh, she's just quoting Ben Franklin. Before you get married, here's the quote. Before you get married, keep both eyes wide open. after you get married, keep them both half closed. It's funny. Now, speaking of Franklin as a publisher, he did a lot for the ministry of, even though he might not fully have agreed with every detail, of George Whitefield, who was the preacher of the Great Awakening, the first Great Awakening, who helped basically cause a lot of people to become born again in America. Ben Franklin is to be credited for helping Whitefield's ministry, you know, as far as the publishing is concerned. And those, you know, those publications were widely disseminated.
That's right. And he, you know, we think of newspapers today, now they're online, of course, but you know, the printing, a printer, a newspaper printer also printed other books because often they were the only ones with a printing press. And yes, I think Franklin really, he's not considered our most religious president, but you do see him in pivotal moments turning to faith, such as the Constitutional Convention when he called for prayer. But he understood that that people needed to connect with God. And he had his own liturgy that he made up, that he wrote, that he said in his private time. But he also really couldn't, what really attracted him to about God was he just was in awe of nature and of a created being had to create all of this beautiful natural world that we live in. He really saw that God was connected as the creator. And, you know, I think he was very open-minded, and I think that's why he and Whitefield got along together. And Ben Franklin also really valued differences of opinion in making sure that different viewpoints were presented in his newspapers, because he knew that you needed that freedom of thinking to be able to come to a point of wisdom. You know, he believed without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. And he really thought that was the right of every man, was to have freedom of thought and freedom of speech. And you see that coming out in him, you know, even as early as 16, he's working in his brother's newspaper shop in Boston. His brother gets imprisoned for printing something that the authorities didn't like. And Ben Franklin wrote an essay about freedom of speech, but he couldn't use his name, so he used the name Silence Do Good. And that's where his thoughts about freedom of speech were really nurtured during this terrible time with his brother. And that he just believed that whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation would do so by subduing free speech. So he did the opposite. He promoted free speech. And a lot of his guidelines that he came up with for the publishing world, a lot of other newspaper publishers throughout the colonies, they adopted those same rules. So it really seems to me that he can be called the father of American free speech, because he was the one that promoted it and set the standards in the publishing industry in particular.
Now, this incident you were talking about would have taken place in the early or relatively early 1700s. And about half a century or so before that would be John Milton in England, who was a Puritan writer. He's the one who wrote Paradise Lost. But also he wrote an essay about free speech, which at the time, you know, it's hard for us to believe. You know, it's in the air we breathe and so forth, free speech is. But these things had to be worked out. And as you say, you know, Ben Franklin played a key role of in American free speech. And I think America's kind of led the way, too, on this whole front.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was of English value, but America really put a fine point on it, especially when freedom of speech was part of the Bill of Rights. Once the Bill of Rights was accepted and ratified, freedom of speech is and freedom of the press are First Amendment rights. And what I like about I like many things, of course, but one of the really interesting things is that originally, The first amendment about free speech was number 3. It was the Third Amendment. But the first two were about giving Congress more power, and the people didn't vote for the first two. So the Third Amendment became the First Amendment. And what I like about that is that the people were the ones ratifying. You know, they were wanting to make sure they had their rights recognized. And so I think that's a a good image, you know, that from the beginning, this was really a government by the people, and that's how they really wanted it to operate.
And if I could just add one little comment, and that is that in that First Amendment, they do have, of course, the freedom of speech, the freedom of assembly, and so forth. But the very first one listed is related to religion. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And then it goes on from there and talking about these other freedoms, including the press.
That's
and
right.
So forth. So tell
freedom
us.
Of belief.
Pardon me?
No, I was just said freedom of belief.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So tell us about Ben Franklin's upbringing and his religious background, and you know, help us to understand. I know he grew up in quasi-Puritan Boston. I say quasi because it wasn't as devout, let's say, at the time he was growing up as it was certainly 100 years before.
Yes, and he I've seen kind of mixed analysis, I think, of his father's you know, that it was he you know, Puritan, Anglican, and, you know, sometimes Ben Franklin's considered a Quaker, and I'm not quite sure where that comes from exactly, but I know that he was one of the youngest of a lot of kids. He had many older brothers and sisters, and he was the youngest boy, and his father really taught him, and he taught him the Proverbs, and one of the Proverbs was, you know, if you were diligent, and I'm completely paraphrasing, if you were diligent, you might eat with kings. And Ben Franklin later said, well, I have met with five kings, and I ate with the king of Denmark. And the ideal, that Puritan virtue of hard work, is one that his father really instilled in him. He believed in being industrious. His father was a candle maker. And Ben Franklin decided he didn't want to make candles, you know, with his life. He wanted to do printing and publishing. But that influence of his father is, it was really prevalent in his thinking, and especially being industrious. That was a very strong Puritan virtue. Franklin wrote that, you know, I would wheel my wheelbarrow full of paper that I had just bought. I'd make sure people could see that I was pushing the paper so that they would know that I'm hardworking, industriousness, you know, and we think of Yankee ingenuity. That's what some of that is. It's just that work ethic that has its roots in Christianity and the Proverbs.
All right. Excellent. By the way, the particular proverb you referred to is, I believe it's the last verse of Proverbs 22. Mm-hmm. I must say, for the last 5 years or so, I've been reading the Proverbs every day. So we're recording this today on the 26th. So I read Proverbs 26 today. I do it every day.
Wow.
It's a fantastic hobby or habit to get into. One last thing about Ben Franklin. We referenced briefly, you know, his speech before the Constitutional Convention. But that speech is so good. I mean, he says, I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this, that God governs in the affairs of men, and if a sparrow cannot fall without his notice, can an empire rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that except the Lord builds a house, they that labor, labor in vain. So he goes on to say, basically, what we're doing is not going to work unless we turn to God and ask him for his help. And a variation of what he asked for, that there be some prayer for the Constitutional Convention, that was fulfilled in a local church service where the Founding Fathers got together and were prayed for and prayed together and so forth. And they did finally finish the Constitution a couple months later. But before Franklin's speech, there was a lot of animosity. So we have 20 seconds to wrap things up. What do you want to say in closing, Jane Cook, about Ben Franklin?
I just think he's someone that we should know about. And, you know, as part of celebrating America's 250th, I think it would be great if everyone chose to learn about something from the Revolution. And Ben Franklin is certainly one to dive into.
JaneCook.com for more information. Thank you, Jane. All the best.
Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.